This Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas, but mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
What's going on? Who's in the background? Oh, it's Black Betty.
Ram Jam.
You know what? You're right. And you've Ram Jam right into Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show. And do you know something about Ram Jam, Chris? Do you know a little something? If not, I'm going to tell you a little something about Ram Jam.
Oh, tell me.
The leader of the band and the lead guitarist.
Lives next door to you.
No, Bill Bartlett. He was in the Lemon Pipers.
Oh, wow.
The bubblegum group out of the 60s. He went from the Lemon Pipers to this. Listen to that. It doesn't get better than that on Motormouth Radio. It just doesn't. So, and I got to tell you, that's going out to a new group of guys that it's an old group of guys, but it is a new. I was inducted into a new club this week.
They're new old stock.
Right. Remember I told you I was inducted into the Romeo Club, the retired old men eating out?
Yes.
Well, now I'm in another one. Can you
look at you? This. What does that hat say? If I can read that, it says what? Pudding Club? No, I can't read it.
No, it says Do Nothing Club.
Do Nothing Club.
I was asked by a group of my friends if I would join them in the Do Nothing Club, which is a bunch of guys who are kind of retired and semi-retired. Not everybody. Some guys are. They just get together and have burgers and beer and shoot the breeze and hang out and do nothing. I went to the first meeting, and it was a great success, of course.
So tell me, the question is at the tip of my tongue here. What did you do?
Well, we didn't really do nothing. We ate, we drank, and we told a lot of stories, told a lot of lies. And these guys know the show. My friend, you know, Ricky and Jeff and George and Matt, Wally, guys know the show. So I've known these guys a long time. You know, it's just a matter of now you go through life and things change a little. And like, I didn't know you guys had a club. They're like, well, yeah, we don't know if you should really be in it either because you're doing more than you should be doing. I said, well, that's okay. You know, it's true. Very true.
I used to go see my dad towards the last years. I used to go see him and I'd say, hey, Pop, how you doing? He goes, as little as possible.
There you go.
He used to tell me.
Righty-o.
What are you doing? As little as possible.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you know what's so funny about that particular song? Let me tell you a little something about Black Benny.
Tell me.
That's one of those songs that stays in your head for the rest of the day.
Yeah, that's true. And that, you know what? I will gladly have that song in my head for the rest of the day.
Oh, you know what? Just playing what? You played maybe 15 seconds of it. I'm going to be stuck with that tune for the rest of the day now. Thank you very much. One day, I was at work one time, and a guy walks into the break room. I'm sitting there heating up my lunch. He walks into the break room and he goes, I see that worried look upon your face.
Oh,
you
boy.
Got you in trouble. And I went, thanks a lot, Pete. I says, now that's going to be stuck in my head for the next 3 weeks.
Right, right. Well, you know what? Here, I'll tell you something. These guys really had a lot of chops. They didn't have a lot of hits. That was really Black Betty was it. But they had another
one. That was the only one.
No, yeah. Keep Your Hands on the Wheel. They did that, too.
Oh,
they were okay. Taking a lot of stuff from Ledbetter, which was an old blues guy. But you want to hear a good, I mean, just to give you a little sample, I'll give you a little taste of the riff that these guys put down. Listen to this one. Yeah. You know, good old 70s rock and roll?
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, they knew how to lay it down. So
I like that.
I give Ram Jam a lot of, I've always been a fan. I've always been a fan of the band and, of course, of that, of these songs. So there's only, you know, there's only like 11 songs on the album. So whatever. But yeah. So
very cool.
I would normally say you can call us at 516-572-7440. You can for a few minutes because we have a guest. We have Mr. Dan Short from Phantom Works going to be calling us today. Phantom Works was off the air and now he's back. And we're going to let Dan explain how he's coming back into the media. So that'll
be very intriguing.
He'll be calling us in a little while. But you can also follow us on social media, Motormouth Radio, on the internet, on Facebook, and on Twitter, and on Instagram. It's real_Motormouth Radio. And where you'll see the things that we get involved in. I've been putting a lot of, you know, my hobby stuff up there, some more audio projects are up there, and a little bit of car stuff.
Because you've been doing nothing.
Yeah, well, right. You got that right. No, some cool.
I'm going to take this and run with it.
You know, Matt Goman, Brian, I got from him this really, really cool brake flaring tool that we talked about a while ago.
I saw the picture of it on Instagram. It looks really cool.
Oh, let me tell you something. When you, if you look, you can see the flares that I made. The tool did absolutely flawless. And the reason I wanted this tool is because it's a small format and you can use it under a car. When I was doing brake line work on the trucks at the shop, the tow truck and the flatbed, and cars as well, you know, you're in a constrained area under there, under a vehicle, and you have to make a flare if you're going to repair a line. And
now, let me ask you a question. It's an inline tool. Am I correct?
What do you mean by inline?
Meaning that it's like a bigger tube that's shaped like two long, almost like nut-like shapes, and it looks like it fits over the brake line itself, and you tie it together. It looks like with like two wrenches going back and forth.
Well,
am I correct?
I was using two wrenches. No, really, what it is it's a die. It's a two-piece, a split die, and the die takes the place of the bar. Like when you have a brake flaring tool, there's a bar with maybe five holes in it for the five different brake line sizes. This has a die per size. So you take the one die, like 3/16, if that's a standard size.
Right.
You put the brake line through it. You adjust the depth with the flaring cone, same as a regular brake tool. You adjust the depth, lock down the screws on the die. There's a handle that goes, then the flaring bar goes on the other side, and that's got a hex. And it's kind of odd. I asked Brian, and he was scratching his head. I said, the hex of the flex bar is a 7/8 wrench, and the nut on the back, the bolt on the back that threads in the actual piece that makes the flare is 9/16.
Okay.
But the Allen screws that you tighten on the die are 5mm. I said, what's with Matt go with? I said, were we back in the 80s with a GM where we have American and metric? And he was like, I don't know. So really, it's all self-contained. And I was even thinking of making a fixture to hold the die to give me more leverage. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, when I'm out on a workbench, maybe, but when I'm under the car doing this, that's when that small profile is going to come in handy.
Right.
You don't have to hold the die necessarily.
But now, how do you remove the tool once the flare is made?
Well, that's easy. The flaring bar, the piece in the post that you saw Matt go tools on, you back out the flaring piece at the back, the 9/16. Then you thread off that other piece, and the die is now still clamped around the line. So there's two Allen screws on top of the die. You loosen them, and you just remove it from the line. Kind of like the chrome bar that you would have on your traditional brake flaring tool.
Oh, because I'm thinking along the lines of it's going to be stuck there.
No. It's everything that's in the traditional brake flaring tool, just a more compact so that you can use it in a tighter space. And it worked. Well, I haven't used it in a tight space yet. I have no questions that it's going to work well in a tight space because it's so much smaller than a regular flaring tool.
Oh, yeah. Just seeing the pictures of it on Instagram were proves positive that it will work in a tight space.
You know, and if you're doing a, well, the standard lines on the cars, they're pretty soft. If you're using the Cooper Nickel stuff as a replacement, that stuff is really soft. That's easy.
You like that stuff, right?
I do.
That's the stuff that comes in the roll.
Yeah, I've used it. Well, you can buy it in sticks, too. They sell it that way. And there's also some of the coated lines that you buy at the parts stores. It's either a black or a gray anti-rust coating. That stuff is mild. You can, you know, I haven't done stainless with this. I guess you can. Stainless is always the wild card. That's always because it's so hard, so brittle. It's tough. Stainless, I like to get pre-made if I can. In fact, I got a job coming in now. I'll be doing brake lines on an Avalanche. It's another one of Mike's trucks. And you know, he bought them pre-made. You know, he bought the kit. So the worst that I'll have to do is maybe tweak the bends a little to get it in place. And I don't know if he got stainless or not. I've done stainless. It's a little more, you know, a little more challenging sometimes. You know, what I like to do then is get the fitting threaded into the mating block,
right,
then make the line fit, because working the other way can be very very tough.
Oh, yes, again. I totally agree. I bought pre-bent brake lines for the 300, and what was nice about Chrysler is they run them outside, literally under the driver's door.
Right.
They run their brake lines. I guess that's why they're so prone to rusting, I guess, because they're exposed to everything.
Oh, sure.
All kinds of dirt, road salt, and blah, blah, whatever gets kicked up from the wheels. But yeah, and it was able to, and I did the same exact thing you did because it was pre-bent. The long line that went from the front of the car to the back of the car, they actually bend it and put it in the box. They put two pieces of tape around it, and they say, bend it back here.
Yeah, they use
between.
Yeah. No, when I got the stainless lines for my Pontiac, the same thing. The long line down the side of the car was gently bent in half with a tag on it. You know, unbend here.
Unbend here, yeah.
And but it's the smaller bends that are sometimes not 100% right on point, and you have to just give them a little bit of a tweak here and there. And it's, you know.
But I did exactly what you said. I laid the piece in there and just threaded it, lightly threaded it. I didn't wrench it down. I just got the threads to connect into the blocks.
Okay.
And then I started bending into all where the brackets are because it has a regular bracket with a nut. And just the bracket would be like I guess you would say like a shape of the letter B without the stem, I guess, in around
the
B circle. So that would catch the tube and there would be a hole on the other side where the nut would go in, where the bolt would go in. And I just laid them in and literally just pushed it all together and tightened it all. It all fell into place where very little bending and manipulating. And I think I had that brake line in less than 40 minutes was done.
Nice.
I was like, this is awesome.
Right, right.
I love this stuff. So yeah, I don't know how you're going to fare with the Avalanche. I mean, I know they are prone to, I've been reading, I was actually looking at purchasing an Avalanche and I saw a lot of brake line issues on a lot of used ones, but I don't know how General Motors has got this wonderful little way of weaving a brake line completely around a frame.
I know.
So your work may be cut out for you.
No, you know what? Well, listen, I did the lines on the Grand National, and I got
that. You said that was a pain.
And I got that out in one piece and then got it in one piece. And, I mean, literally, you have it, like, pointing at the chassis, but the line is out the side of the car facing the other bay, you know, so you can turn. But now, on the lift, you have that availability. So, yeah, it could be done. I mean, at home, on the ground, it's harder because you don't have a downward angle that you can exploit.
Right.
But, yeah, it's...
You don't have the Z-axis.
Right.
You just have X and Y. You don't have Z.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, you're very... That is very true. That is very true.
Getting a little geometry there. Yeah. You don't have your Z.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was tough to do on... I remember doing a brake line... Having brake line issues on some of my GM vehicles in the old days... And it was a pain. That's when I did a single flare on one of my Buicks and got chastised here on this program.
Oh, I remember that.
By your friend Chuck.
Chuck.
Who with his cool, raspy, gravelly voice went, Chris, you got a double flare.
He's right. He's right. Because, yeah, single flare ain't going to get you home. It's going to get you, you know, on a tow truck.
Right. And that's, I actually have to admit, it was fine. it was great up until I sold the car.
Okay.
So I don't know what happened after that. But yeah, I guess there's a lot of times I've realized that now growing up, working on cars now compared to working on cars when I was a teenager, that ignorance is bliss.
Oh, isn't it?
It really was. There were some stunts that I remember pulling on some older vehicles that I owned, and I just think back and go, wow, I should do a radio show and tell people about what not to do.
It's amazing. I know, it really is. It's
so yeah, but that's that was one of those things, was single flaring and getting completely, and I didn't mind getting completely chastised on this program.
Right.
I got to find that. We got to find that. That was way back. I think that was like back in 2004, 2005. I don't even remember.
I'll tell you what, we're going to go way back to the phones. And we're going to say, hello, caller, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Oh, I probably called the wrong number. I was trying to get a hold of Ray.
Yeah, you went to pizzeria, right?
This is Dan Short. Good morning.
How are you, Dan?
Good afternoon. Morning.
Yes, good afternoon. It's a pleasure.
Hey,
pleasure to have you back on Motormouth Radio.
Yeah, so how are you guys doing today? It's kind of cold here, but not too bad.
Oh, yeah, same here. It was a little chilly this morning, but nothing a nice little flannel shirt won't take care of.
Well, yeah. Dan, what do you consider cold?
Good question.
I know you've probably experienced all kinds of weather. What do you consider cold?
Yeah, you know, well, actually, and that's the irony. I don't know if you know it. I was born in northern Canada where we would have temperatures with the wind chill of 100 below zero. So I guess I'm just being a big sissy when I call, you know, 30 degrees cold, because it's really not cold.
Have you ever, I mean, I'm sure you've done work in 30 degree weather, and you probably have done car work in colder weather than that, I'm assuming, right?
Oh yeah, I have, and it's miserable, isn't it? Have you noticed that a wrench is much harder when it's frozen than when it's, like, you know, 90 degrees?
And they sound different when they hit the concrete when they're that cold. I don't know. Maybe it's the Snap-on stuff, and maybe it's the good wrenches that do that. I don't know, but the I've noticed that too, and I'm like, oh, geez.
Well, I was actually thinking that my knuckles sound different when they smack the end of the engine block, because the wrench gives out, and there's a different noise that comes out of my mouth when it's 30 degrees.
Yeah, right. Yeah. A little more.
Well, Dan, you talk about not tolerating the cold. You're talking to a guy that rolls a barbecue up to the car and puts the flame on low and puts the tools on the grill.
Okay, so
in weather like that, 30 and below, the barbecue comes out and the wrenches get put onto the grill thusly.
Yeah, exactly. You see, I as I get older, I've discovered that I like being a little bit more comfortable. My dad did the opposite. I was born in northern Canada, spent my formative years in Phoenix, Arizona, and when he retired, he moved to northern Vermont. Now, I tried to explain to him that that was the opposite of what normal people do, that people generally go to Arizona when they retire, and yep, he decided to go to northern Vermont, and 1 year had 18 feet of snow, and I just said, Dad, why did you retire in the wrong place?
Yeah. Wow. And what was his answer to that, Dan?
You know, he didn't really have an answer. He sort of said, you know, that he agreed that he went in the wrong direction, but he did it for my mom because she grew up there.
Okay. Well, there's his reason right there, and that's fine. Justifiable. That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a frugal woman.
Yeah, and great family, you know. They had a very cool, her whole family was from up there, had dairy farms up in Vermont, but just, you know, kind of brutal in the winter. So I'm more of a fan now. I think if I could figure out a way to work in Key West all winter long and be back in Virginia for the summer, I'd probably do that if I could figure that one out. I'm just not smart enough yet.
Yeah, well, we all have a lot to learn where that goes, because
I'm
with you.
But anyway, the big news, of course, is, you know, as I flip through, I watch YouTube as TV. That's what I do. It's I have a bunch of feeds that I follow, and now I stumble on this great new Dan Short feed for Phantom Works. I'm like, hey, what's this guy's back? What's going on? And I found some interesting stuff, and that's why we reached out to ask you to break it to us and our audience. What's going on now with Dan Fantenberg?
Well, thanks so much. First of all, thanks again for having me back on. The Fantenberg Show, we did 9 seasons on the Discovery Velocity Motor Trend Networks. I needed a break from that for some different reasons, but ultimately the whole idea was that people, I think, really enjoyed the show, and so we kept getting just thousands and thousands of requests to do it again, and so when an interesting opportunity sort of availed itself to me, it was, all right, we're going to do the show again. Mm-hmm. And let me just, you mentioned something interesting, YouTube. How much of your viewing of shows and movies and everything else do you do on YouTube versus network television?
85% at least.
At least.
And who else? Have we also got Joe on here today with us?
No, Joe's not on with us. It's just myself and Chris.
Oh, okay. Well, good morning. So how about you, Chris? What amount of time do you spend viewing, like, YouTube or streaming services versus network?
Oh, definitely. The same as Ray. I will watch more YouTube. It's funny because I'm a passive television watcher. When I'm watching on YouTube, I'm active now. Now I get to choose what I would like to mm-hmm. watch instead of sitting back and relaxing like in the old days mm-hmm. when that's what we used to do, right? You'd sit back and
no. The old days was get up and change the channel. Put on channel 4.
Yeah, well, that was me. I was a kid, I was the remote. You know, my father would hit me in the back of the head and go, hey, turn on channel 2.
Right.
Let's see what's on Sullivan.
Put on the news.
Yeah.
Cronkite.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to get up off the carpet. So, yeah, so I do watch a lot of streaming, more streaming than network. Yes, Dan, it's definitely.
Yeah. And so that's why, you know, right now there are some talks with some of the other networks, but really we're kind of happy right now. On YouTube, we have complete control of content. I mean, we're doing full shows, we're doing specials, we're doing all sorts of stuff, but I no longer have my hands tied in terms of what I can say and what I can do. It's sort of like your show. You do whatever you want on your show, and that's sort of the way we're taking this new program is we're doing what we want to do now. And it's actually a lot more fun. I'll tell you that thing. I no longer get nasty letters from network executives if I say the wrong word.
Okay. Right. Yeah. See, like, we are still bound by the FCC, so we have to watch that. But
right.
Other than that, we content wise, you're right. We can do what we like.
So. Yeah, and we've got the same sort of legal and moral and ethical standards, but before I wasn't allowed to voice an opinion that if it wasn't well received, and now I'm allowed to be as opinionated as I want to be, you know, and sort of like you.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that's, you know, we're in America. I mean, we should be able to voice an opinion as, you know, not even within reason. I mean,
kind of feedback are you getting from voicing your opinion? Is it a positive feedback or maybe not so much?
Well, so far, look, we've decided to make the platform for the moment apolitical. So we're sticking with us, but we're, you know, we can explore more of the world of what I want to say in terms of building cars. So even though we're apolitical, we're still freer with our conversation about, you know, who did something right and who did something wrong.
Yeah.
And so far the feedback's been amazing. In fact, our viewership, just in the first 3 weeks of releasing videos, we've already had about a 6-fold increase in subscribers in just 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so awesome.
It's gone kind of crazy, and we're certainly hoping that we're saying the right things, you know, that at least people agree with what we're saying and we're doing. But so far it's gone really, really well. So I'm kind of hoping everybody will tune in and subscribe, and you know, we will soon enough be talking with some networks about bringing the series as it was formerly on before back onto a few other networks. Not until we create our own content and do what we want to do.
You know, it's funny, Dan, because this is what I find so appealing about what you do and how you do it, is that you started out like jumping through all the network hoops. But what you did was, even though it restricted you, you created an effective fan base. And now you did what I always admire. You went from the network, the shackles of the network, and you took your popularity to do what you want to do. And now it's a success. And I find that that's so appealing to me. And I appreciate just hearing these stories and hearing these situations come to fruition the way they did. And I think it's pretty cool.
Right.
Well, thanks. And if I can tell you a quick story, when we had released our first, two or three episodes, we were getting some feedback from the network. Look, Dan needs to shut up, be a lot less opinionated. He needs to sort of play the car game a lot more. Only what happened was, after about our third or fourth episode came out, Discovery, we had the single highest ratings of any show and the highest viewership increases and all of those metrics that they care about. When I guess, what is it, the Nielsen ratings, when they went to those, our ratings were just crushing everything else, and we became the number one series on Velocity within like three shows. And when that happened, all this Dan shut up stuff changed, and they said, you know what, for now he can say anything he wants. And it was really rather funny how the philosophy of the network changed because of the success of the show. And we were much rawer and grittier than most. And that actually worked, because that's kind of the car culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anybody who's ever been in a shop or near, walked past the shop, knows what it's like when guys are working on cars.
Yeah, we tried to hide most of the butt crack, but other than that, you got the full experience of what it was really like to be in a shop. And, the time frames were real. I mean, because it was all real, right? We were just building real cars for real people, and we just had cameras following us. So it was an interesting sort of experiment in reality TV, because whether you realize it or not, there's a lot less grit in most reality TV shows than we would all like to think.
Yeah, it's polished. And, that's the thing. Once you are aware of the media, you can see right through it. And you can tell, you can just see what they did, where they slickened it up and where they made it more generic and vanilla pudding-ish. And that's okay, because you that's on a, I guess, as a median level. Sure, you're not offending anybody, but we know that's not the way it really works.
So. Yeah, exactly. Nice. So,
and that was the thing. Even when you're Sean on Phantom Works, where you would you'd be talking to one of your techs, and something would happen, and you'd curse, they would curse, and of course they bleeped it out. Like, that was real, and that's how it works when you're in the shop. You get frustrated, things don't fit. You have to do it twice or three times, or somebody screws up, and like, hey, yeah, then you call the guy a dumbass, and then you move on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Well, ironically, one of the shows that sticks in almost everyone's head is the kid with the red Volkswagen. Everybody brings that show up to me, and ironically, that was the show that the network said, we are not going to air the show. And they said, you need to give us a different ending. And I said, I'm not doing it. I said, it's what's happened. I'm not giving you another car to replace the Volkswagen, because they basically said, we are deleting that half of the show. We always do two cars. And so they said, give us another car right now. And I said, we're not doing it. I said, you're either airing that show or you just lose the show. And so against everything they wanted to do, they aired it. And it turned out in the long run to be the second highest viewed show we had ever done. And it was because of the absolute sort of headbutting nature and the gravitas of the show. And so I actually loved doing that show because it was very real.
Right. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, real short, what happened with the red Volkswagen, real fast, just so the people that did not see it?
Okay, so basically, a kid came in and he had been in an accident and got the insurance company to agree to, we'll just say, do repair 1, 2, and 3. Well, he came to me and said, oh, the insurance company has said, don't worry about anything. They'll do upgrade 4, 5, and 6. And I said, this doesn't sound right. And then he brought me paperwork showing that all of this stuff had been approved. And I said, well, if it's been approved, we'll go ahead and do it. So we ended up doing a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't actually part of the accident. And it turns out that, well, it kind of hadn't been approved. And then he didn't like some of the upgrades. Like, for instance, we did, some drop spindles on the front to lower his VW Bug closer to the ground. And we did some suspension upgrades. And when he decided he didn't like them, he said, well, they weren't approved anyway. Right. And fortunately for us, we had all sides of all conversations covered. So like, you know, they say the difference between slander and libel and not is whether you can prove that it's true.
Yeah. Right.
And because we could prove everything was true, we were allowed to say anything we wanted. But it was, we were dancing on thin ice with a few of the subjects on that show.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. And that's the way it goes. People, they'll pull the old flip flop on you. You know, you think you have a good relationship with somebody, and then they go and they sue you. You know, or they're calling you a liar, and they're like, hey, where'd that come from?
You know, I've discovered at the shop that the guy that you trust the least is the guy who says, well, you can trust me, I would never do that.
Right.
Ironically, they're the ones that stand in line to do it.
Exactly.
So
that's when the flag goes up. Get it.
Yeah, I got to tell you guys something else. Our flag has gone up. It's the bottom of the hour. Dan, we need to take care of some business and take a short break. You stay with us. I have to let everybody know that Sundays at 9 a.m., if you wait till next week, you can catch this. The great show called High Fidelity. You'll join Kim Tracy for a mix of music with a focus on newer music from less familiar artists. It's like less familiar radio hosts like us. Playlists often reflect the college radio charts. Also listen for old favorites, guilty pleasures, and kick-ass covers. And today I have to mention that the WHPC weather forecast, powered by Pantano's Gourmet and Hewlett, Uniondale and Garden City Park, is, it's cold today. It's in the 30s. They had a list here, but they, it's in the 30s. Clear, sunny, going to be nice. It's going to be a little cooler and darker tonight. Can you imagine that? Mm. And then tomorrow will be good. So the other thing we do is the honor group of the hour. Chris, do we have one of those?
Of course we do, Ray. And this is basically not as extensive as some of the vehicles that Dan puts together nowadays that are off the grid, but it's a suburban problem. Thusly, here at the Mother Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour crowd, if you attempt to drive your vehicle in the morning when every window is covered in dew, you know what dew is, that fine coating of humidity that rests on the glass in early mornings and does not allow for a clear view of all around you. So you fire up the defogger fan into max mode, start the defogging process, but the car is so cold that the defogger isn't working, just makes a lot of noise. So you put it in drive, turn on the windshield wipers, use your jacket sleeve and forearm to clean a small patch of windshield on the inside of the car while you're moving so you can make the morning train or get the kids to school. You know, by the time you're able to see clearly through the windshield, you're already about a quarter mile away from the house anyway. So if a blinding glass condensation in the morning does not seem to stop you from your appointed rounds, you are part of the Motor Mouth Radio on the group of the hour.
Nice.
There you go.
We've all been there. All right. So Dan, hang tough with us. We're going to take a short break. We'll do an abbreviated break this bit, and we'll come back and talk about all the other great stuff you're doing. And I got to throw the other song of the hour goes out to Ricky, one of the Do Nothing members. He requested this one, so we're going to give him a little bit more Ram Jam on Motor Mouth Radio, and we'll be.
Say it's not Black Betty, is it?
No,
that's
it's still
not. Running through my head.
That's the opener. You'll have that'll be in your head for the whole day. No, this is another
Black
cool
Betty,
one.
Bam, lamb, oh, Black Betty, bam, lamb, you're just waiting for me.
I'm waiting for you to shut up. All right, so keep it where you got it on 90.3 WHBC. We'll be back with more Dan Short in about a minute or so. Keep it where you got it.
The Motor Mouths will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services. 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CARSTAR Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available at 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motor Mouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
Go along, carry on now, going strong.
That's right. You may learn something, or you're going to learn something from Dan Short, our guest. Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, Motor Mouth Radio. We are back. That was 404 for Ricky. Dan, we're back in the second half hour, and now we're in the long stretch. So tell us, I know you have some other information you want to talk about with some of the other projects that you're involved in that are really cool. And we actually have some questions about that. So if you'd like to kick that off, we're all ears.
All right. Well, so I just wanted to say that, you know, the whole creation of Phantom Arts was in response to a need that I saw. When I get out of the military and I decided to build cars and have fun with it, it was really tough for me to find a shop that could do the things I wanted to do at any sort of reasonable price at all. And so there, ergo, was the creation of Phantom Arts. Well, you know, in the last few years, I don't know about you, but I've sort of been watching the events on the horizon with a little bit of trepidation as I, you know, like these days, I'm having a hard time getting car parts. Obviously, we've had some issues with fuel. There have been food shortages. And so that's sort of what started this next sort of venture of mine. So what do you think, Ray? Are you a little... Do you get a little nervous about what's going on sort of around the world today with Russia, China, North Korea, and everything that's happening?
Sure. When you watch the world stage, it's definitely a ballet. And these days especially, there's a lot that's to be concerned about. So, yeah. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as I was sort of looking at these events unfold, my wife and I decided to, you know, move out of the city and get a farm. And that sort of spurred on, you know, sort of this domino effect where people, you know, as I was going out picking up cows and goats, and people started talking about what I'm doing. And before long, I realized that I had more people asking me to help them sort of do some homesteading stuff than people had asked me to do car stuff for them. And I thought, well, I think it's time to launch the second enterprise. And so we're still building cars, and we're building off-grid cars, but now we're also doing other off-grid things, everything from solar to cows and pigs to chickens. And it's a really interesting life. Now, Ray, Chris, either of you ever spent any time on a farm as a kid?
You're talking to two suburbanites, Dan.
Yeah, very, very, sure. Very, very little, just for pleasure purposes only. Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I can tell you where I grew up. Do you remember the chase scene from The French Connection?
Oh, yeah.
That was around the corner from my house.
Okay. So, all right. So not a big farm guy.
No.
Not a big farm guy.
Okay, well, and let me just tell you one of the coolest things I've ever had happen in my life. You know, we bought some chickens at Tractor Supply, and you know, chickens do what chickens do. They try and kill themselves as fast as they can, I've noticed, and you got to work really hard to stop them from killing themselves. But what eventually happened, it took about a year, we got a rooster, and we finally had our first chicken born on our farm from our own rooster and our own hen. And I got to tell you, that's like, it's like better than watching a puppy being born. You know what I mean?
Wow.
that you've got this little chicken, and then suddenly it's making you breakfast because an egg comes out of its butt, and you've got something to eat. And there's this, I know that almost sounds goofy, but it's a pretty magical thing to have your own egg come from your own chicken and eat it for breakfast, and then you go, okay, I kind of get this Green Acres farm thing. And it's actually a lot of fun to do.
Do you have like a work shirt now that says Oliver? You know, Oliver Wendell Douglas.
Well, and if you see me on the phone at my place, you'll realize that it's closer than you think. Because you remember he had to climb the telephone
yes.
pole and like hang on to a piece of tinfoil to make a phone call?
Sure. Yes.
Well, it's about that same way at my place. We are off grid far enough that there's actually not even a good phone signal from my house.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So we're no internet. We provide our own electricity and our own water. So I mean, we're pretty far off grid at this point. And I have to drive about 45 minutes to get to the shop, to build cars. So it's an off grid experience like many people will never have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a self-sufficiency that you are absolutely right, Dan. I have absolutely no concept of this. Like, the questions I will ask you would be like almost equivalent to like what a 12-year-old would ask you.
Well, I know Chris would get hives if the deli was closed, you know, up on
you're
Avenue
kidding?
on the Avenue there. Be like, ah.
Well, so go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, how are supplies? I'm sure you need supplies for your self-sufficiency, and I know you're having a hard time getting supplies for vehicles. Are you having the same difficulty with supplies for the farm?
Well, so the long story short is, every time we run into a problem, like, getting feed for an animal, it just moves us into a new direction. And so now we've started growing some of our own animal feed. So long story short, we are almost to the point where we're producing not only all of the food for the family, the point of producing enough food for our own animals to eat. So we're sort of like go out and produce an engine block in my backyard. I can actually produce a tomato plant and use it to feed an animal and use that animal to feed us. So it's a really interesting, a different approach to a logistics problem.
Yeah,
wow,
definitely.
It's
the circle of life. You have that all going. Yeah, if you could do that with car parts, you could have like the Brembo brake tree. You know, that'd be nice. But
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what do you guys see? Let's just talk about logistics for cars. Are you seeing logistics getting better or worse in the last year? Because a year ago they were tough, and I thought they'd be better by now. But what are you guys seeing?
I'm seeing it worse. Yeah.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
I'm noticing
for availability and quality, definitely worse.
Okay. Well, I wasn't going to bring up that second one, but quality. Am I the only one that's seeing that quality has gone down considerably in the last 2 years?
Yeah, I believe so. You know, I just had an alternator I had to put on a car at the shop, and it looked nice. It was a rebuilt unit, and I'd been in that field of work for many years, so I'm familiar with it. But I had to reclock it because it wasn't in the right position. When I split it apart, I could see the new parts, but I saw parts that if I was rebuilding it, I would have tossed. And, you know, I explained to the owner of the shop, I said, maybe these parts could have tested good, so they decided to use them. But, you know, the where I worked, the visual was good enough. If it, you know, the stator had some burn wire, no, you just chuck it. And then sure enough, this thing ended up being bad when I put it on. I had to take it off, and we had to get another one. So, yeah, that's just one. I mean, we could go on about this forever and ever. There's all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, a buddy of mine who supplies, like, I've got one supplier for all of my C2 Corvette parts, and he's now to the point where he says he has to buy about 5 parts to get one that's good enough to install in a car.
Yeah.
Wow. And you know, so we've seen a real problem lately with part quality control. And for me, being a shop owner, that's a problem, because every time I send a car out with 100 parts, you know, I'm just wondering when when the part, one of those parts is going to fail. So, you know, I've got a slightly different emotion when I see a car go. I used to see a car go and know that it was good for 5 years. Now when I watch one drive off, I wonder just how long it'll be before I get the next call.
Yeah, and as a shop owner now, you're also paying your mechanics to put that part on, and you know, there's a whole nother level of involvement with that. So yeah, there's and the other level is you have to explain that to a customer and almost like prepare him for the, you know, for the blow that may come and hit him in the back of the head.
The inevitable.
Yeah.
I'm spending a lot more time doing that these days, explaining to them that, look, it's going to take longer to get what you need. Oh, and by the way, the reality is there's a chance that it's not going to last as long as you think. So it's not that it wasn't installed right. It's that it just wasn't really rebuilt all that right.
Right.
So are you seeing that as a challenge in your shop these days?
I see it a lot with brake components, you know, calipers and master cylinders and things. I've seen it a lot with that. Without a doubt. You know, no two ways about it. It's definitely, you know, it is an issue. It is a problem.
And here, yes, space is limited here. So I know you probably have the huge shop that you can put a car on the side while waiting for a part. And I know Ray doesn't have that luxury because he loses a bay and there's only three.
Yeah.
So he's got to either push the car out if he's lucky enough.
That's right.
While you're waiting for that part to arrive. So I get it. No, you're absolutely right. That adds to the frustration of what we're talking about. Sure.
Mm.
How many 6 month parts have you had to wait for so far? We've had to do a lot of 6 month parts.
You know, yeah. And the thing is, when we work on like the stuff that I specialize in is the older vehicles, more of the classic stuff. But I do see some of the newer stuff too. And that stuff is unobtainium a lot of times. So I'm taking components out and actually taking them apart on a bench to try to refurbish them, like I do with audio gear that I work on, and, you know, trying to get some more life out of an original part. Then, because the other one, you know, you just can't get it. A lot of the switches and controls are just not. And now I wonder about when cars of the 90s I have seen are starting to be restored. And my question has always been, what about the electronics? You know, nobody's restoring BCMs. You can get ECMs all over the place, but you can't get BCMs and some of the other electronic switching and relays and things like that and components. And you're going to have to do without is what it is. So. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And look, we're facing one newer car, and don't yell at me for this, but I wanted to explore the world of electric cars, and so my wife and now my son has a Chevy Volt, and a Chevy Volt has three modules, and each module has 33 groups, and each group has four cells in it, and just one of those cells has gone bad.
Yep.
The car is dead. It's dead in the water.
Yep.
And we went to Chevrolet to get a replacement, either module or the cell pack. Mm-hmm. Not available.
No.
Back order 2 years. Yep. So what's going to happen in the near future is these cars that have these like critical battery systems, you've got one cell that goes bad, the entire car is DOA.
But that's okay.
That's a big problem.
Oh, that's okay, because everybody in the country should be driving an electric vehicle. We know that that's what they're telling us. And you know what? One of our good friends, Jeep and Al, asked me to ask you this. With the he was talking about the business hardened vehicles, about protecting them against EMP. These are the vehicles you're building for, you know, off grid use. He was curious how you're protecting those computers from EMP blasts.
Okay, so there's two different options you have for doing an EMP vehicle. Option one, which is the most logical, is take a car built before, you know, 978 microchips were on board.
Right.
And so, for instance, you know, the pickups and the SUVs of the late 60s and the very early 70s are ideal vehicles to build. Throw a spare alternator and a set of points in a Faraday bag, and you've got a vehicle that is not only EMP resistant, but even in the worst case scenario, you swap out two components in 30 minutes and you're back on the road.
Right.
Now, there's a company I'm working with right now, and until I prove their stuff works, I'm not going to believe it, but they've got a four-stage, effectively it's an EMP filter that theoretically can receive, absorb, and distribute all of the energy of an EMP in microseconds, not just milliseconds, but microseconds, and they claim it's fast enough to protect the car's PCM, ECM, CCM, and so those are the ongoing tests that we've got right now. But here's the challenge: you know, frying a vehicle's electrical system to prove something does or doesn't work can get expensive real fast.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You let out the smoke.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and most people don't understand about that whole letting out the smoke until they've done it. And then once they have, they're like, okay, yeah, I guess that was a bad thing. But letting the smoke out of a modern car, you realize it totals the car, right?
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's done. Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, though, Dan, when you mentioned the 60s and 70s vehicles, now you may have to do, you know, $30,000 worth of rust repair before you can think about making that.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, and so that the whole idea is, at least for me, is you try and find the nicer vehicles from that era that maybe aren't complete basket cases.
Yeah,
And right now I'm focusing more on off-grid ability than I am the cosmetic beauty. You know what I mean? That,
yeah,
that
sure.
Way, you look, a bug-out vehicle doesn't have to be pretty. It just has to run.
Right.
And that's kind of my focus now.
Right, right.
Exactly. And I do agree with you when it comes down to, I still like to know how to fix a carburetor. I still like to know how to fix an alternator because of those things, because there's no electronics in it. And if there is that case where, like you say, the inevitable happens, I guess I could always use my bartering techniques,
yeah,
which were very big growing up in Brooklyn,
right,
to survive in this world. But yeah, I always feel that that knowledge should never go away. How to fix a mechanical vehicle.
How'd that go? Chris is like, hey, I got these hubcaps for your car. I'd like to have that switchblade, though. You think we can make a deal?
Hey, you know, I'm looking for a dozen eggs. I'll fix your carburetor. You know what I mean? You know, it's one of those things.
Well, you know, it isn't crazy that bartering could be the currency of the future again, right? It was in the past.
It always has been.
And mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's going to take a bigger role here in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was fortunate enough, or unfortunate, however you want to say it, but as part of my spec ops background, one of the things that we studied was sort of what would it take to take down the United States of America. And the sad part is that many of things happening around the world today, you know, are digital Achilles heel, mm-hmm. our dependency on all of these electronics and microcircuits, that really has been and is our Achilles heel. And so just think about it. If somebody wanted to take out America, the most logical way to do it is just take down our digits.
Sure.
And so that's sort of what I'm focused on.
Right, right. Yeah, very true. I mean, right here where I live on Long Island, in Suffolk County, there the whole internet was breached, and basically they lost everything. They were hacked, and it was ransomware and the whole thing, and they're still rebuilding. They hadn't had the correct backups. Of course, now it all comes to light. Well, these people were hired to do this, and they warned the government that, you know, you need to put this in place, and the budget wasn't there, so we'll do it next time, and now they're paying the price for it. So, yeah, people have to wake up and know that that's all too real.
And Dan, I'm with you, because as a cybersecurity graduate, I've this is part of my lesson plan, was learning how to deal with if the grid does collapse. So I totally understand what you're saying. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think anybody wants that to happen, but the reality is it is probably not an unrealistic scenario, because when you look at the big power players in the world today, whether it's Russia, China, or you know, there's a few other, you know, rogue states out there, the United States is probably the one country that no one ever wants to, you know, sort of launch an attack against our shores. We're the largest military in the world, and I don't mean the military that we think of. I'm talking about the 340 million people of this country that are all armed. And so I don't think we've got a problem with anybody trying to take over the country. They just take down the country.
Right.
So we've started developing what I think is going to be a bug out trailer, only 6 feet by 8 feet, so fairly small, but hook it up to any vehicle that can operate after an EMP, and it'll have everything you need to survive for over 90 days for a family of four in a little tiny trailer you're going to store in your garage. So those are the kind of fun projects we're playing with these days.
That's good. Wow. Now, is that going to be part of the show? You're going to have that stuff on the air for people to see?
Absolutely. In fact, we're already doing some EMP stuff. You realize that the show PhantomWorks, our average show took 18 months to create one episode.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's
so
incredible.
Everybody thinks that we weren't shooting anything in 30 days, that we were running 30 shows simultaneously because some of our shows took over 5 years to shoot.
Sure.
So as a result, just because I'm filming something today doesn't mean you'll see it anytime soon. But we're already filming EMP upgrades, vehicles that'll drive underwater, vehicles that'll resist just about any sort of attack you can imagine, including up armored stuff. So we're working on all this stuff and we're releasing it as fast as we can. But, there's that time. It's what do they say? 9 women can't make a baby in 1 month. And we're sort of up against that right now.
Right. Yeah.
I got to write that down. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I listen to the show back just to hear that again.
But I'll tell you what, we are having a lot more fun shooting these days. Much of the film crew is the same film crew that shot the series PhantomWorks for the Discovery Channel. Only at this point, we have an entirely different relationship with them, and so we're actually having a lot of fun shooting these days. It's the way it should be. So if you ever get a chance to come down to the shop and you want to see what's going on, please do so, because I think you'll be surprised at just how much how involved it is to shoot a show when you want it to look like you're not really shooting a show, which is what we try to do, right? Mm-hmm. We try not to make it look like anything staged, because really nothing is.
Right,
that's incredible.
Well, I have friends already asked me that. They're sending me messages saying, "Hey, when do we go?" So, Dan, we're getting to the end of the show. So, before we have to rush this, if you want to put out any contact information or any of the social media links that people may want to pursue to find you, please do that now so people can jot them down.
Okay, so, all right, well, thank you. So, obviously, just go on YouTube to PhantomWorks and subscribe. That's the number one thing. Our subscriber rate has gone up huge, and we're looking for that to grow much, much bigger. And the new company is flagged under a website known as called Easy Homesteading, and that's just E and Z, not EASY. Mm-hmm. So easyhomesteading.com, and that's where we're bringing out all sorts of these survivalist products, and that website will be growing. We believe we'll have 2 million vendors working with us by about March, April of this coming year. We've already got a lot of positive feedback. So Easy Homesteading and PhantomWorks, please join us and follow us along for the ride, because it's going to be one heck of an adventure. It really will be.
Excellent. Well, Dan, I thank you for coming on. And again, like I said to you previously, I'll reach out to you to see if you can make some time to come on Thursday night on Playing in Traffic, make a return on that show as well, and we can do maybe an expanded version of this for the viewers there. And
would love to.
Excellent. All right, Dan, thank you very much. Well, we got to run because we're at the end of our time here, and I'll be in touch, and we'll follow up again on a Thursday night.
Chris and Ray, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dan. All right.
Thanks, Dan. Yep. A fascinating topic. Yep. This was great. Thank you.
All righty. So
all the best. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent. That was Dan Short from PhantomWorks, of course, and the other things. Talk about not having moss grow under your feet. Dan keeps very busy.
Dan's far from doing nothing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
like you are. Well, you don't do nothing. I mean, it's so funny. But what Dan is talking about is you know, you pray for peace, but you prepare for war. And
yeah, there you go. That's that how we case, do this radio show.
That's every week here.
Right? Yeah, I know it. You got that right.
But 20 years every week.
You got that right. So true. So true.
That's for sure. But yeah, it's a subject to address. It's a subject to investigate. And right. I like the way that Dan's got a nice, I would say, an intellectual view on it.
Yeah.
Which is good to see.
Well, what we need to investigate now is the changing of the guard, because you're going to hear Thunder Road now, Kim Tracy doing the best of Bruce Springsteen in the band. So, Chris, we're going to be out of here. What do we say to the people that are waiting out in the park? Not the motorcycle guys doing training. The other guys that are waiting in the parking lot for me to leave. What do I tell them?
Don't follow us home unless you have a bug-out trailer.
There you go. Very good. Or some EMP insulation. All right. So, for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, we'll be back next week with more Motormouth Radio. We may have a guest. We'll see. We may not. You'll have to tune in to find out. So for the Do-Nothing Club members, thanks, guys. It's a pleasure wearing a hat. We'll see you next week. All right?
See you, bye.
All right. WHPC 90.3 FM. We're out.